And now, get ready to smile again with radio's home folks, Vic and Fade. At our little home halfway up in the next block, Vic and Fade are sitting in the kitchen. They're talking to Uncle Fletcher. And Uncle Fletcher has the floor right now. Let's listen in.
That voice, ladies and gentlemen, is none other than one of the great announcers of the golden age of radio, Mr. Ed Roberts. And Ed is now living in Chicago. And years ago, as I'm sure many of my listeners know here in Washington, Ed was the announcer for the Vic and Sade radio program, a great serial written by the late Paul Reimer. Ed, tell me, how did you get started into radio broadcasting?
Oh, golly, you got a half hour?
Sure.
Well, when I graduated from high school, it was 1933, and it was the midst of the Depression. And I had decided that I was going to go on to school and become an attorney. But I had to make some money first, so I was working in a grocery store up there. And one evening, a gentleman walked in that I'm sure is familiar to a lot of your listeners, Raymond Edward Johnson. He was the voice of Inner Sanctum for years and years.
Right.
But at this time, he was working as an announcer at WRJN in Racine, Wisconsin. And he was leaving to go to the Goodman School of Dramatics here in Chicago. So when he saw me there, he suggested that rather than work as a clerk in the store, I'd take an audition and become a radio announcer, and I did, and I guess I got a little bit too lucky because I moved from job to job for about 3-4 years and started making some fairly decent money and never went back to school.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way the whole thing started, John.
Tell me, where was your first network job?
Well, my first network job was with CBS. That was in 1938. And I went to work for CBS for, 13 months, actually. And then I was assigned to, as a part of my staff duties at CBS here in Chicago, to a show called The Gospel Singer for Procter & Gamble and American Family Soap. And they made, they make check records once in a while, and they'd send them down to Cincinnati to Procter & Gamble. And they sent one down of me, and I lucked out again. They got a hold of their agency and suggested that I do all of their American Family work. They had shows on CBS and one over at WGN, our local independent station, and one at NBC, and three shows a day for this particular soap, American Family.
Do you happen to remember the names of the programs?
Yeah, there's the Gospel Singer with Ed McHugh, the one I'm talking about now, that they heard at P&G and wanted me to work for them. Is that what you meant, John?
Right.
Yeah. And it was a 15-minute program of gospel hymns every morning.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, the agency contacted me, and I then left CBS. That was in 39, to freelance, and I freelanced until 1972, back working for CBS again.
And you're a staff announcer at WBBM in Chicago?
Yep, sure am.
Oh, great.
Happy to have a job.
In this day and age, I know what you mean.
Well, times have changed so much, and you have to change with them.
Right.
And I guess I'm just an old hack announcer, and nowadays they use so many of the actors and whatnot on these commercials, and they do an excellent job, and I just sit there with my tongue hanging out wishing I could do the same. But the business has been very, very good to me for, like I say, over 40 years. I certainly can't complain, and I've enjoyed every minute of it.
Great. Tell me, how did you get to the part for Vic and Sade to be the announcer on the show?
Well, again, working for Procter & Gamble. Excuse me, John. I'm trying to remember the first show I did for them. I became the Crisco announcer. Oh, I know. It was The Right to Happiness. It was a soap opera on CBS at 12:30 every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in New York, and I had heard that they were going to audition for another announcer for the show, so I went up to the agency, Compton Advertising, and they gave me some copy for good old Crisco, and I read it, and they selected me to do the show. So now I'm established with Crisco. And I don't really remember who was sponsoring Vic and Sade, but I do know that it became Crisco, and they used to use me on all the Crisco stuff so that it would help identify the product. They heard Roberts, and they thought of Crisco, you know.
Right.
So we did. I did several of their shows, and Vic and Sade happened to be one of them that they bought, and I started doing Vic and Sade. I think it was back in 1941.
Yeah. I think for a while, Ed Hurley, he was the commercial salesman for the show out of New York, wasn't he?
That's right. Ed Hurley, he did the commercials, and Mel Allen before him.
I'll be darned.
And then, of course, Mel went on to greener pastures and became the voice of the Yankees. And Eddie was doing the show when they brought the whole thing to be done out of Chicago.
Uh-huh. Right. You started the show in 41. How long were you on the series?
I really can't remember when it went off the air. I think it was in the middle 40s, 46 or something.
Yeah,
like
right.
That.
It went to a half-hour format for a while.
Yeah, but they went off the air first, and then they came back with this half-hour format, and it didn't work out. They also tried it in the very early days of television as a television vehicle.
Right.
And somehow or other, that didn't work out. Bernadine did it. I can't remember who they had. Yes, I can. I can see him, but I can't remember his name. The gentleman they had doing the part of Vic, because Art Van Harvey at that time had several heart attacks.
Right.
And he was just too not well enough to do the television thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Billy'd left town by that time. Uncle Fletcher was here. Clarence Hartzell, of course.
You mentioned a couple things that I wanted to ask you about. The series, as most people can recall it now, was most popular in the quarter-hour form. What do you think was wrong with the half-hour version? Why didn't that work?
I really don't know. There are many, many, many times in many shows that I've listened to as I worked that there were 15 minutes, and I wish they would have gone on for a half hour.
Yeah. You know, in the half-hour show, they actually brought in other characters, the voices of other characters, Mr. Sprawl and all of these other people,
uh-huh.
which weren't in the quarter-hour version. It was all
that's
animation
right.
there.
I don't have any, you know, like you never do. What is the audience going to like? What aren't they going to like? You know, you don't
right.
know.
Right.
So why didn't it work as a half-hour show? I really don't have any idea.
Right. You mentioned that it went to television. Was it on the network?
No, it was on, I believe it was on WGN locally up here.
Uh-huh. Half hour?
Yeah, half hour.
Half hour. That
and
didn't
they were just
go
trying
either.
To see whether it would go or not. But you know, there's a wonderful thing about radio, John, and that was you couldn't see anybody. It was all in your own mind. You
right.
made up how the characters looked and from the way they sounded and whatnot. You used your imagination. And that, I think, was part of a lot of the charm, if they can say.
Besides the imagination, what else was there about that program that made it stand out from all the other soap operas that were on the air to you?
Well, to me, Bernadine was Sade, and Art Van Harvey was Vic, and Billy Idelson was Rush, and Clarence Hartzell was Uncle Fletcher. They looked like them. They sounded like I expected they would sound if I had been sitting at home. It was a great cast.
Right.
A great cast. And they played so well with one another. I don't know that someone else coming in could have done as good a job. I really feel that way about it. They worked so well together. That, of course, was, and then Paul's writing, you know. This man was a genius.
Right.
In my book, as far as writing comedy.
I agree with you 100% on that one.
I do. Mary Fran has a book out now. Have you seen it?
I have it right in front of me.
And a lot of the episodes are in there. Somehow or other, from the written page, it doesn't come to life for me like it did when our four wonderful characters used to read those lines.
Right.
But anybody who's a Vic and Sade buff certainly ought to get that book and read it because
yes, sir.
Those wonderful scripts are in there that we're talking about.
Who was your favorite character on the show?
Well, I think the guy that made me laugh the loudest was Uncle Fletcher.
Uncle Fletcher, yeah. Everybody says that.
As far as a favorite character, you know, you loved them all, but Uncle Fletcher used to get himself in some of the doggone situations.
There is one episode, I've never heard it, but I've read about it, and I don't know whether you can recall it or not. It was an episode where Uncle Fletcher visits the Gook household, and he winds up absolutely ruining and destroying the front porch. Do you recall that episode?
As a matter of fact, I don't, too.
You don't?
No, I can't quite recall that one, John. But I can't remember any particular episodes in the series. I remember more stories about the show. I'd like to tell you a little one. It's not brand new material because Hugh Downs, who was an announcer at NBC in Chicago at the time, I did Vic and Sade from there, and a good friend of ours, told the story on the Jack Parr Show one night. But it actually did happen, and it really broke all of us up. Paul brought his mother down to see the show,
mm-hmm.
and this was before I started to announce Vic and Sade. And so they took her to the studio, and they explained all the mic situations and what was going on in the studio, and then they took in the control room. They explained about the control rooms and the buttons and the knobs and the dials and what they all meant. And then they went on the air, and at this time, I think it was Mel was doing it from New York, She hears a voice, and now I'll get ready to smile again with radio's home folks, they can say. And she looks around a little bit perplexed. And Paul looked at her, and he said, "That's the announcer, Mother. He's in New York." This is now a couple of years later, and she comes down to visit again, and she brings her sister along. And I'm announcing the show. So at any rate, she explains all the things in the studio to her sister, and takes her in the control room and explains to her the things that she heard about the knobs and buttons and whatnot. And all of a sudden, we get the cue to go on the air. And I say, "And now get ready to smile again with radio's home, folks." And she turns to her sister in a big stage whisper and says, "You see that announcer? He's in New York."
A marvelous story.
Set up for grabs, yeah.
Your favorite character, Uncle Fletcher.
Uh-huh.
I know the first time I ever heard an episode on this series, Vic and Sade and Fletch were all in it, and Rush wasn't.
Yeah.
And I sat there and I listened to it. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I said, "Now, wait a minute. These people are all trying to put me on, and Fletcher especially. Because everybody, I think, you know, has an Uncle Fletcher or some relative that in so many ways is like Fletcher."
Yeah.
And this, to me, was one of the, you know, one of the beautiful characterizations on this show was this man, Uncle Fletcher, Clarence Harsel. I understand he's running an antique shop now. Is that correct?
You know, I've completely lost track of Clarence. I don't know where he is. I don't really know where Byrne is. Art, of course, passed on. And Billy, you probably read a lot of the tags on the shows
right
from Hollywood. He's doing very well as a producer and a writer and a consultant, and is very successful out in Hollywood, but I haven't seen him for many years.
Yeah.
I talked to Mary Fran Reimer here. Oh, golly, a couple of the guys in the studio called her, and they put me on the phone just after her book came out, which wasn't too long ago, and she is still working at the Chicago Historical Society, I guess, and very happily so. She's a very charming lady.
It's a great book, and I'm very hopeful she'll come out with a second volume of it.
Yeah. There have been people from time to time. I know at one time they called me and asked me if I had any old 15-minute transcriptions of Vic and Sade. Mm-hmm. They're trying to put together a lot of them, perhaps for a radio show, perhaps for an album, but I guess all of those efforts kind of...
Well, yeah, they did. I had found out some time ago that... our good friends at Procter & Gamble destroyed all of the programs. They had them all on transcription, and apparently some new management in there. They saw a bunch of transcriptions in a warehouse, and we don't need these anymore, and out they went.
That's a shame.
Tell me something about Art Van Harvey. He's the one gentleman that, you know, we don't hear much or, you know, read much about the man, because, of course, he passed away some years ago, right?
Yeah, quite a few years ago, John. Art was a real friendly, warm gentleman. He very happily married and wrapped up in his... didn't have any kiddies, but Peggy, his wife, and they lived down here in the Lake Shore and Chicago's lakefront. And had a very quiet life. He was not a swinger or a goer or any of that type of stuff, but a very nice guy. Billy, of course, when he was on the show, let me see. Oh, I guess he probably was about 14 or 15 years of age. And at one time, we had two shows a day. We had a show at NBC at 10:15 and then a repeat on the Columbia Network for the West Coast, but on CBS, on another network, at 12:30. And one day they were doing one of the episodes, and this is a very rare occurrence, I assure you. But at any rate, Billy broke up and started to laugh. So after the show... talking about Art, he got Billy aside and he said, "Look," he said, "now you're in show business and you're very successful and you're a fine actor, and just because that script is funny and you're tickled with it, you're out of character when you laugh at it, because that destroys the whole illusion. You have got to be the kind of an actor that can read real funny lines and not break up."
Yeah, that's straight, right?
Yeah. So we got over to CBS for the 12:30 repeat. And who do you think broke up in the same place? He's a great guy. They all were. They were lovely people. I have, like I said when we started out here, 42 years now, you know, as an announcer, and I've worked many, many shows. I could almost say hundreds of them, I guess. That was the happiest period in my life, because I looked forward to going to work, and I looked forward to being at work and being with these people and listening to the show. And then it was really great when you did it twice a day. It was just as much fun the second time as it was the first time.
It was all new.
Yeah, it was a There's a great show. You know, though, it never had too great a rating.
It didn't?
No. As a matter of fact, I think that possibly had it been another show enjoying the same type of rating, Procter & Gamble might have taken it off the air before they did.
Mm-hmm.
But they, down at P&G, thought it was such a great show, and they loved it so much that they kept it on the air. It was never one of the top-rated shows.
Mm-hmm.
And the gentleman who would review it in the radio columns and write about it and whatnot, oh, glowing, you know, great, wonderful show. But the audience we never picked up quite the audience that we certainly thought we should have.
Tell me, what kind of a gentleman was Paul Reimer?
Oh, golly. He was a whimsical guy, kind of a fake character. He wrote almost like the humor that he put on paper.
Mm-hmm.
Paul either liked you or he didn't like you, and he made no bones about it. He was one of these gentlemen that somehow he always just spoke what he had in his mind.
And,
quite often you don't win friends and influence people with doing that type of thing. We got along famously. I can only say the nicest things about Paul. He was easy to work with as a writer. Some writers, you know, are kind of temperamental about their scripts and stuff, but he felt that he had the finest cast in the world, and he just let them go ahead and do their work. He would make a little suggestion now and then, but nothing in particular. He did odd things. Excuse me. For example, we'd be sitting at home, and it'd be dinner time, and the doorbell would ring. It'd be Paul, and he'd be standing out there. Well, come on in, Paul. And he'd come in. Never say a word to you. He'd pull up a chair, we had the kitchen, at the kitchen table, and Paul would sit down, and he might have a little helping of food, and look at you. Still isn't talking, you know, it's part of his gag, you know. And he'd sit there all through dinner without saying a word. The first time this happens, you wonder what's going on, but then you realize it's a little Reimerism stuff here, so you'd pay no attention to him, act like he wasn't there. If he wanted to join the conversation, he would. But he'd come out, if he was riding around, thinking about things, and it was 2:00 in the morning, he'd have no compunctions about coming up to your door and ringing the bell and getting you out of bed and making you come down, and he'd sit there and talk to you for a while. I don't mean these things to sound derogatory, or you asked about Paul. He was an entirely different kind of person. Mm-hmm. At one time, he had a little contract trouble with, I believe it was Jules Herbivore, who was then a VP at NBC, and they were not going to do anything about giving him more money. And Paul said, well, he said, okay, so I'll drive a taxi cab. So they had about 2 weeks of scripts ahead, thank heaven, because he walked out, and the next day he was driving a taxi cab.
Oh, my heavens. You know, he sounds to me, you know, from all I've read about him and heard about him, to be the part of Uncle Fletcher. He really seems to me to be the Fletcher in disguise in a lot of ways.
I never quite got that impression, John.
No?
Never did.
Now, your comment about him showing up at your house and just coming in and sitting down and having dinner, Fletcher, I would think, would do something just like that.
He would do that, wouldn't he? I didn't realize it.
Yeah.
I was telling you. I never really got that impression, but maybe. Maybe different things to different people, you know.
Yeah. You know, there was a time, I believe it was in the middle 40s, where Billy Idelson was off the show. I don't know whether he left or not. And they introduced a new character, a young boy named Russell.
Oh, yeah. Boy, you're making me think. Son of a gun. Yeah, sure I remember that. I can't remember who the character was, though.
No, I've never been able to find out his name, but again, in listening to the shows, he certainly never matched Idelson at all.
No, Billy's timing was just beautiful. They had, they introduced another couple on the show, too, and I can't remember their names.
Was that Robert and Slobbert Hink?
Man and his wife. And I can't remember their names, but they were on for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
They always came back to the same format, however, the four of them.
Well, Ed, I don't want to take any more of your time. We've talked for almost a half hour. Thank you very much for...
This has been a real joy. As I told you, it was certainly the happiest period in my life as far as enjoying going to work and enjoying what I was doing down there, although I've had a good time with all of it. But that was a great time because that was a great show and they were wonderful people. And I'm proud to have been a part of it.
You should be. There was not another radio program like it.
No, there sure wasn't. That's real good to talk to you, too. It's been a pleasure.
An interview that I did with Ed Roberts, the announcer for the Vic and Sade radio show, back on October the 2nd, 1973.